Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back here on the Pack of Day Radio Show, live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM, the Fan Studios, powered by the Pottawatomie Sportsbook. Reminder that the Mason Crosby Show is coming up next from 9 to 11. But joining us right now, courtesy of the Fan Guest Hotline with Gruber Law, is the one and only Owen Reese, Assistant Director of College Scouting for Optimum Scouting. You can find him on social media at Reese Draft. Owen, it's good to be a Packers fan. It's good to be talking Green Bay Packers. How are you doing, my friend?
Good, Andy. How are you, man?
I'm doing fantastic. It's always great to be chatting with you. Appreciate you taking the time this morning. Let's just start. You know, obviously Green Bay is 2-0. We've had, now another weekend to kind of marinate and sit in what's all going on in the NFL. What are your kind of key takeaways from what Green Bay's been able to do over these first couple weeks of the season?
I think the big thing, just from watching, is how much complimentary football for Green Bay can shatter that glass ceiling they've kind of had. I don't want to paint the Packers as victims here, but since Jordan Love had taken over, it was a lot of, we better be perfect because we're not sure whether it was Joe Barry last year with the first year of Halfley, right? Like there were glimpses, but the defense wasn't something that the Packers could ever truly lean on. Or even if they were, and in the instances that they did show up, it wasn't always that, what they were doing was going to benefit the offense other than potentially getting them the ball back or obviously not letting the other team score a lot, which is important, right? But as far as this is the, with as explosive as Green Bay's offense can be, right? It's super important that the defense obviously limits the other team, but what they're doing right now is they're presenting a ton of turnover opportunities as well as like the negative yard play stuff, right? Like, being able to stunt a drive very quickly and get the ball back, or from a field position standpoint of, not being a bend but don't break defense is fine sometimes, but as far as like they're making things happen, they're flying around a lot of negative plays and making other teams kind of play offense as apprehensively. I think you can see at that point that Green Bay, it just seems like is, they're not like scoring, they don't have 500 yards of offense a game or anything, but it seems like they have no reservations to play at whatever tempo they would like at any point, I think, given how the defense has done it. And I think that, like I said, kind of wrapping back to that complimentary football, that it's not just the offense operating with the hope that the defense shows up. It's no, like, we know what we're going to get from them, and we can operate this way because of that.
What I really liked about that, too, there's a couple things that I liked about that, is first, when the when Washington did cut it to 7 this past week, the offense got the ball back and it's just like, oh, we'll just go put this thing away. Like, they immediately go down and score the touchdown. And it's like, all right, 2-touchdown game again. And you felt immediately comfortable with everything. It didn't feel like, if there would have been like a 3-and-out there, it maybe starts to get a little nervy. Offense just like, oh, we can just put the foot back on the gas and just go down and score a touchdown and take care of this thing. And that's exactly what they did. The other thing is, you mentioned all the negative plays. So many times defensively in the NFL, when you're causing those negative plays, it feels like there's a risk reward proposition of like, oh, we're going to bring some extra pressure. We're going to do some things to maybe get those negatives. But we also know that we might give up some explosives because we're bringing a little bit of pressure. We're willing to take that risk from time to time. Jeff Affley has somehow figured out a way to be able to be completely disruptive, both in the run game and in the passing game, and get those negative plays in both without sacrificing the back end. The safeties have been so good coming up and making plays in the run game. And so it doesn't even barely get to the safeties because Quay and Cooper are kind of cleaning up everything on the second level that barely gets past the first level, but you're not seeing those explosives in the run game. And the passing game this past week, there was the 20 yarder on the touchdown where Quay Walker kind of just overextended and Ertz cut back and was able to get in the end zone. Then there was that 19 yarder to McCaffrey where Daniels finally kind of got a little bit of time to roll out. And then McCaffrey kind of came open down the field. That was it for explosives, a 20 yarder and a 19 yarder, and nothing even remotely close to like some sort of 40, 60, anything like that. They've been really sound on the back end and really sound in keeping everything in front of them while also creating negative plays.
Yeah, I think the big thing too is you're really seeing, under Mike Pettine even, and in kind of the Joe Barry and prior to Halfley being here, right, they had been that odd front base defense, a lot of bigger bodies, more, and I don't want to say lumbering, right, but guys like Preston Smith are those bigger, thicker, bully type defensive front guys. And not that they're not physical now, but and obviously Parsons is a separate part of this, but like you see just the pure team speed in the front of Van Ness and Gary and Quay and Edger and Cooper especially, right? Like they're able to handle the run game a lot, and they haven't gotten beat with much misdirection or stuff, but they can just flow so fast. And I think that they're able to swallow stuff up so quick due to their speed that I think like it's taken a lot of stress off the back end as well. They haven't been so, it hasn't gotten to the secondary, right? They're able to kind of cover a lot of things up quickly. And I think that's where, you know, obviously there's a lot of football that will have to be played, and NFL coaches get paid a lot of money too, and they'll figure stuff out. But in these first 2 weeks, it's been a little bit of blitzkrieg. Things are happening so fast up front that, you know, they're kind of covering things up really quickly. And the other way to help the secondary out is to make the other quarterback make faster decisions and get the ball out quicker. And you don't have to cover deep when, you know, they are not holding on to the ball as long. So again, complimentary football. And I think that, you know, eventually they'll get it figured out. But for right now, I said Green Bay definitely has opposing offenses on their heels, which is a nice change as a Packer fan.
I like to believe that Jeff Hafley's defense is uncrackable and that nobody's going to figure it out through the rest of the season. And that's the reality that I'm going to live in right now until somebody proves me otherwise. We're being joined
tough
by Owen
Reese.
Yeah, exactly. We're being joined by Owen Reese, Assistant Director of College Scouting for Optimum Scouting. You can find him on social media at Reese Draft. When you heard Micah Parsons was being acquired by Green Bay, what was your obviously initial reaction to that? And then could you have drawn it up basically any better from his impact in Green Bay so far from what he's been able to bring to the table?
No. And I mean, honestly, like when you first started to hear the rumblings and whoever it is, what, like Ricky, the dog on Twitter or whatever, that
legend,
right? Like it, once you put that seed in your brain, you're like, oh wow, like this might actually happen. That would be pretty crazy. But once it did happen, I don't want to we're not victims for being Packers fans. Generally, we're fairly spoiled. So I don't want to make it seem like we're some poverty franchise that all of a sudden is deciding to take this seriously. But I think the bigger thing was like, oh, like they're really going for it. Like this is the Twitter fan mindset of it should just be all aggression all the time, win at all costs every single year, burn the boats, right? Like they're actually kind of doing it. And that was kind of the first thing. And obviously since it's happened, it's at the gravity of Micah Parsons was felt. I mean, he played 12 snaps, 15 snaps in the first game. And you could immediately, he changed. It's this cliche gets used a lot, but he's like, he is a game changer, dynamic changer. He is literally we have to account for him on every single snap. And you can see right away, you got the pick from Evan Williams week one. Last week you had Washington setting the slide in an empty set to the boundary because of Parsons, right? Which when the defensive coordinator knows how they're going to set their slide in the pass pro to a certain guy, you can really start to manipulate that and do a lot of stuff with that. And, Quay Walker ended up getting a hurry. I think Daniels got the ball off. You can start to see a little bit of that stuff. Like, you can really, as a defense, you're dictating to the offense as the other opposed to the other way around, which, again, I think opens up a lot of possibilities for Green Bay. And when they did it, I was like, you know, like that's the type of move that, like, if you're going to go for Micah Parsons, to be completely honest, I really don't care who they take in the first round the next 2 years anyways. You know what I mean? Like there's a little bit of that. He is so dynamic and so talented that the talent disparity with all due respect to whoever those two players are in the future, I'm willing to take a bet that he's going to be better than both of them. And so once you take that part of like, we're playing for right now, I'm not building for the future. Like I said, it's a bit of a different mindset. Again, I'm very reserved to show any, like the Packers aren't, they're not an overly conservative franchise. That's not my point. But I think it was like, this is a little bit extreme for them, which is a nice thing to see as a fan.
No, I think so too. And I think I talked about it kind of before it happened. I'm like, you're Brian Gutekunst. You get to be an NFL general manager A lot of people, obviously the vast majority of the world, never gets an opportunity to do this. You have an opportunity to go and like set your legacy and do something special. Like at some point, don't you just want to go and like make that big legacy defining move that people are going to remember you for in Green Bay? And like, he's obviously had, you know, Xavier McKinney, Josh Jacobs, the Za'Darius Smith signing, Preston Love. Smith, Amos, et cetera, at the time. Like, yeah, obviously Jordan Love, like you said, there's certainly things that he has done really, really well, but it feels like if you could just go out and get that one piece and be ultra aggressive and have kind of that all-in mentality that one time, like just go for it at some point. And it felt like this was the right player for the right reasons at the right time. It hit everything that Goody loves, right? Age is 26 years old, premium position player, a position that he knew he needed a little bit more juice at, somebody that is an extreme athlete, which we know he loves, and is super versatile, which we know he loves. Like, it's literally a perfect, like, Goody, like, made in a lab player, and he recognized it, and he's like, yep, that's my guy. I'm going to go get him, and it could not have worked out any better so far.
No doubt, and I think you're kind of seeing that now, and as much as I will fight against it for a couple of months of the year, right? Like, I think I saw Ross tweeted this the other day, and it's like, they have the RAS defense right now. Like, that's what this is. And yep. At the end of the day, like, I don't think it's any surprise that the NFL values really athletic guys, right? But like, this is the blueprint for what Halfley and Gutekunst want to do, right? Like, you've got big athletic fast dudes in the front. That's
everywhere.
Right.
Yeah. We're being joined by Owen Reese, Assistant Director of College Scouting for Optimum Scouting. Again, follow him on social media at Reese Draft. Owen, I know you are able to see line play in a very special way just based on your background. So I want to start with the defensive line, Micah Parsons aside. We know what Micah has been able to do. I think most people, even with just one good eye, can kind of see the impact that he's making. What have you seen from the rest of the defensive line, the Colby Woodens, the LVNs, the Devontae Wyatts, Rashawn Garys, et cetera, that's been able to make them so successful up front?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing in my brain is like those guys, and this is a unique way to pair this. I think it's a similar thing to Green Bay's receivers, right? Where they don't have a guy, right? They are all talented. They all have a role. They all do different things, but there is no Devontae Adams. This is the number one target guy, right?
Sure.
And so when you look at that defensive front outside of Parsons now, right, they were kind of in a similar boat. They have a bunch of quality players, or in concept, quality athletes, quality players. You know, Rashawn Gary has been a Pro Bowler. Lucas Van Ness was obviously a top pick and has a lot of intrigue and tools. And Wooten and Carl Brooks have kind of worn multiple hats so far while they've been here. Devontae Wyatt's the penetrating three tech that makes a lot of sense, right? Like, and you've got some of these guys like Stackhouse now, who is a UDFA nose tackle, right? But is going to fill his role.
Yep.
And if you just rolled that team out there, they would be a fine unit. They're just not overly dynamic. But I think the biggest thing is that like putting Parsons out there allows all of them to basically have one-on-ones, right? And as opposed to like, you're not really playing to the scheme as much as like, we can dial up a one-on-one for, you know, Van Ness or for Rashawn or Devontae Wyatt on a guard that can't pass pro as well against speed guys. And now you're seeing the guys like Wooten and Brooks, who are kind of those hybrid guys. Like, they can be power guys against a tackle if they need, but they can also be more of a finesse guy against the guard inside. And all of them having that focus not being on them, right? Like, I think that's all opening up and kind of optimizing all of those guys, is that you don't have to be the guy, right? Like, if you think of a baseball lineup, if you have a really solid three hitter with no cleanup guy, right? Like, we can kind of pitch around this guy. We can avoid him, right? You're not putting him in positions to be successful.
Right.
What Parsons can be is that guy behind him. I'm like, no, we have to pitch to this guy because the guy behind him, I don't want to pitch to with guys on base. And now that's what he's doing. And I don't mean to cop out and just put everything on Micah Parsons, but the attention and the gravity that he pulls right now, all of a sudden you're not sliding to Rashawn Gary, right? You can't double other guys. He's going to attract that much attention. And when you can dictate, again, when you can dictate with a single player how the other team has to pass protect based off of his alignment, you open up a lot of things. And I think that's where, for lack of a better term, if you have a bunch of B players, B-minus players, they're a lot more effective when they can be your second and third option as opposed to being dependent on to be the guy. And I think that's what realistically the major benefit of Parsons is that he opens up that for everybody else.
As much as I'm sure DeMarcus Covington's doing a phenomenal job up front with the defensive line, I don't think it's difficult to see the impact that Micah Parsons, if all of a sudden,
makes Covington a lot better coach, no doubt.
Yes, exactly. And also, like, Devontae Wyatt looks better, Wooden looks better, LVN looks better, looks better, Brooks looks better. Again, maybe it's just some really good impressive stuff from DeMarcus Covington, but the big game changer there certainly is Micah Parsons and what he's brought to that defensive line, and I think everyone, again, is better because of it. Before we get you out of here, Owen, on the flip side, the offensive line, they've obviously had some adversity so far. Aaron Banks is down with injury. Zach Tom is down with injury. They've had to play at right tackle a little bit with Kennard, a little bit with Anthony Belton. Jordan Morgan's getting a little bit more time because of some of the injuries. What have you seen from that offensive line, and maybe what's something that they can do to help that running game a little bit more moving forward?
Yeah, honestly, that's where the fan base can struggle at times to, like, they would much rather have something tangible and easy to see, right? Like, this player fills this gap and I can see that and I feel better about the investment that I, you know, the team that I cheer for has made. Yep. Given, you know, allocating resources. And I think that's where, like, there was a lot of frustrations with Jordan Morgan not playing much last year. And then they draft Anthony Belton in the second round. And you're like, well, like, what are they going to do with this guy? Because he's not an immediate fit. He's a second round pick. Could they have used those? You know, could you have had a more immediate impact player elsewhere, et cetera? Now you're starting to see some of that where you just simply continue to invest in a group despite not having an open position for him, right? And so now they kept Rashid Walker. I think that was good. You had Zach Tom, who's very good. You paid him, but now he's dinged up. Okay, you have Jordan Morgan and you have Anthony Belton, who, regardless of where you have to play either of them, can play multiple spots and are going to do that. And that's quality depth. They continue to learn and develop while they sit and don't have to be fed to the wolves every week per se. And then the Kennard thing was actually, it's really intriguing to me. Another just big athletic guy who's kind of bounced around and hasn't quite found his foothold in the NFL yet as a player. But like, if that's your swing tackle, if that's your backup guy, I at least understand it. And there is some upside. You're asking about the run game and how they can help that a little bit. Like, Darian Kennard ain't a pro player because he's a pass pro. You know what I mean? Like, he's a big athletic mauler that wants to get downhill, and that's him and Belton too, right? Anthony Belton's a nice athlete and his size allows him to pass pro fine, but he's there to be big and physical and get after some people. And if however that, you know, combination ends up working, whether it's Morgan at left guard and Belton or Kennard, whatever it is, I think we've seen this shift over the last year or so with who Green Bay is targeting on the offensive line. They want to get bigger and more physical. And you're really starting to see that now. And again, I think the passing game has been so efficient over the first 2 weeks that they haven't had to really lean on Jacobs a ton. And he's been a nice addition. He's been a nice compliment. And obviously he's riding this, 10 games in a row with a touchdown, which is hilarious, to be honest. But like you're going to continue to see that, but the run game hasn't been dominant, but I don't think that they would hesitate to lean on it. You know, if it was some type of adverse conditions or, Jordan just isn't quite locked in one day, I still think that's something they can lean on. And obviously you'd like your best horses out there to do that. But I think the continuing to invest in a position group, despite maybe not seeing immediate fruits of that, is important. And we're seeing that now with the offensive line where, again, you took Jordan Morgan in the first round and he doesn't play a lot as a rookie and everyone's frustrated at that, which I understand. But at the end of the day, like, you build a team for more than 1 year at a time. And I think that's where some of these things, you're starting to see that. And now there are a lot of teams, and you'll see some pretty soon here, who don't have five good offensive linemen or don't have a sixth guy or even don't have a seventh guy. And if you've got eight or nine guys that you feel decent about, you're really kind of, you have luxuries other people don't have. And so we'll see how the run game continues to progress, but it's they've got a lot of resources and a lot of like legitimate tools there on that offensive line. It's not just projects. It's not like they've got some guys that, you know, the floor for like Kennard and Morgan, the floor is actually pretty decent considering. And so if someone like Anthony Belton hits what they think he might be, you're really kind of taking home run swings, but you're able to take those home run swings kind of with knowing like when I might contact is going to be a single regardless, but if I swing really hard, it might be a home run, as opposed to just, you know, blind faith or blind hope. So I think they're in a really good spot, and I think they're going to continue to do well up front.
I'm right there with you. It's never sexy when you take the offensive lineman in the first or second round. There's always, always going to be a Cooper DeJean or somebody out there that's going to seem like a Trey Amos, et cetera, that's out there. That's going to seem like a way more fun pick. Like that's the guy you should go with. Sometimes you just have to eat your vegetables and say, you know what? If we don't do this, everything else falls apart. Like if we don't have an offensive line, if we've got to put somebody out there that is just, you know, a turnstile and they can just get through every play, it breaks Josh Jacobs. It breaks Jordan Love. It breaks the receivers. Everything else we invested in everywhere else in the team doesn't matter if we don't have those guys in the trenches. I know for me personally, having Jordan Morgan and Anthony Belton and being able to go out there in a pinch and already be, you know, paying dividends, that's me.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland, you know, think of the Browns, outside of
Browns. You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Is way more important. And again, I know it's not always the most fun thing in the world, but they've done a really good job of building that depth. And it's going to be, I think, really important through the rest of the season as well. Owen, I cannot thank you enough. What do you want to plug or what can we talk about on the way out here?
Not too much, man. The currently number 11 in the country, 2-0 Platteville Pioneers.
Love it.
Season opener this weekend. So we're doing that. And talking about offensive line, we're rotating 8 dudes up front right now. So it's a good spot to be. It's always good to have more than 5 guys you want to play. But other than that, just kind of rolling through football season. It's the dog days here. So enjoy the Packers season. If we're a Wisconsin fan, try to enjoy the positives of the Badgers season. I know they're not super prevalent at the moment, but there are teams, so you're going to do what you're going to do. And just enjoy football season, because before we know it, it's going to be close to done, and then we're going to be into the NFL draft again, and you're going to wonder where 2025 went. So
happens every single year. Owen, I know you're, like you said, in the dog days of football, so enjoy it, and I appreciate you taking a little bit of your time today to join us. We'll definitely have to do it again sometime, but I appreciate you, and enjoy the rest of football season, my friend.
You bet, Andy. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you to Owen for joining us on the Fan Guest Hotline, powered by Gruber Law. One call, that's all. Make sure to follow him on social media at Reese Draft. This is the Pack-A-Day Radio Show. We got more for you right after this.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.